You heard me earlier. She's, I attribute lead author title to her. I don't know if that's deserved or not, but she certainly seems to be acting in that capacity. Since last year, the Bureau and the states and interested parties have organized. There's three study groups going on that are looking at different aspects of the supply-demand study. Carly's going to give us an up-to-date, in general, where those all are, where, how do we get here, where are we going from here, what's the schedule, when can the audience and others take a look at what they're up and doing. We'll get more details from the work groups later in the day. But, Carly?
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here today. So I am going to talk to you today about what we've been up to since we completed the Colorado River Basin study about a year and a half ago. And I think an important point to kind of keep in mind if you're connecting Terry's talk to the talk I'm about to give is that where Terry ended up when talking about kind of the efforts that are going on around the drought contingency planning, those are consistent, the concepts, and that we're trying to deal with these imbalances, that concept is consistent with what's going on in this moving forward effort, but it's a very much different in terms of the time scale. So the drought contingency effort is looking at more of a short-term, five-year period pilot program time scale, while this effort is building off of the basin study, which was a long-term planning study. So we're looking at much more longer-term type solutions. So I just wanted to make that point. The way my talk is structured, I'm going to do a very brief recap of the study just to kind of get you familiar with what we covered in that. Then I'll talk about the process that we have in place for moving forward, talk about some of the key pieces of that process, the key efforts that are going on under that process. I won't spend too much time on the three work groups that are part of that process because there's sessions devoted to that later today. I'm going to talk about two kind of key efforts, though, that are parallel to that process. One is with respect to exploring tribal water use, which was an area that we needed to focus on more that came out of the basin study. And then I'm going to talk to you about some advances in climate research that are building on off of what was in the basin study. Okay. Terry wasn't kidding about this. All right. Okay, so just a brief recap. I know many of you have seen this figure plenty of times in the past, if not just in the last presentation. But the basin study was completed in 2012. It was conducted by Reclamation and all of the seven basin states. It was a cost-shared effort between us, but it was done in collaboration with many stakeholders throughout the basin. There were multi-stakeholder groups that were providing input really along the whole way and were kind of with us to the very end of the study. It's looking out through 2060. The objective was to assess long-term imbalances in the basin. So what's the difference between what we think the supply might be on the basin and what the demand for water may look like? And then to take those imbalances, see how those play out in terms of all of the resources that the system is operated for, and then look at different options and strategies that could be implemented to resolve those imbalances and reduce the vulnerability to those resources. So this figure is showing you a view of what the historical water use in red and historical water supply looked like on the full basin from about 1919. It's a 10-year running average, smooth, so you can see the trends a little bit better. You see right around the earlier part of the 2000s, the use has surpassed the supply because of the amount of reservoir storage we have in place. We're able to manage through that. So then again, the purpose of the study really was to project that those curves forward. We implemented a scenario planning process, recognizing that there's a very wide range that is plausible associated with how demand and supply might unfold. The supply is in the blue and the demand is in the red. That magic number that is floating around out there a lot about the imbalance that we may see long term through 2060 is 3.2 million acre feet. So that is a median number. So if you take those dark lines in the shaded red and the shaded blue, you subtract them, by 2060 you get 3.2. But you can see there's a range there, and if you took, say, the 25th percentile or the 10th percentile, you're going to get a much different view of what that imbalance looks like. And so that really led into what the next part of the study was, to take that full range, see how the reservoirs were going to operate, how the resources were going to fare under all of those different types of imbalances. So I won't talk too much about that part, but my next piece of the recap is to talk about this options and strategies piece, because I think this really sets up where this moving forward process that we're engaged in today. And so this little schematic here shows the process that we went through, where we took all, the way we went about it is we asked the public to submit all of their ideas about how to resolve these imbalances. We got 150 or so different options. One of them certainly was the question Jim had raised about moving water from the Missouri River Basin into the Colorado River Basin. That was certainly an option that was submitted, along with several other options about moving water from various places up in the Columbia via an under ocean pipeline into Southern California. There were all kinds of things out there. We considered all of them. What we did is we broke them down into representative options. We didn't have the resources to analyze 150 in fine detail. So we broke them into 40 representative options or so. Some examples of those are off on the right side of that representative option. So they're things like M&I conservation, ag conservation, transfers, reuse, etc. And then we went about building portfolios. So no one of these options were really big enough or could be big enough to deal with that full range of imbalances that we saw in the previous figure. We knew we had to group them together. We did so by forming portfolios that really expressed different strategies about how to group options. And those strategies sort of ranged from we want to group options that we know are certain to perform. We can flip the switch, the water will be there, and we're very certain that we'll be able to get through those future imbalances, to strategies that were more about we need to have more flexible type solutions, and the imbalance may not be as big as we think it is, so we don't want to sort of overcompensate. We need to consider the environment. So kind of those were the different types of strategies, and then we bookended it with throw everything at the problem and then throw a very smaller set of ideas that we think everyone could agree on at the problem. And so really what we found, we applied all of those different portfolios to the range of imbalances, and we found that they all actually performed fairly well. All the different vulnerabilities we were looking at, all of those different strategies did pretty well at reducing those vulnerabilities. And really what the key is the trade-offs that are in those portfolios. So how much do they cost? What's the energy needs to put those things in place? What's the environmental footprint like? What's the policy considerations? All of those are very different throughout those portfolios. And, you know, we touched on that a little bit, but we really teed it up for another process to work through that in more detail. And so we teed it up really in the last section of the study report for the basin study, and we listed several areas that we wanted to advance in. And it was really a smorgasbord of areas. These are nothing new, and this wasn't to claim that work isn't already going on in these areas. There's plenty of work going on by all of the stakeholders in the basin in these areas. But based on what we found in the study, these were really areas that we thought, you know, focus advancement should continue in moving forward. And kind of the last bullet there, partnerships, that was more that we felt that all of these areas should be moved forward with this idea of partnerships in mind and collaboration, because that was such a critical part to the study. Okay, so we put together a process to kind of help us do that. We call it the moving forward process, or the next steps process. This was kind of formally launched in May of 2013. We had a little public event where the Assistant Secretary Ann Castle and then Commissioner Mike Connor attended, and with the key lead stakeholders representing different groups in the basin, launched this process. Each of those blue circles there tie back to that list of next steps that I just showed you. And it's, first off, it's recognizing that some of these areas are already being worked on in either state-led or reclamation-led different efforts, and those should continue. But really, that the core of this process is the standing up of these yellow work groups that are in the middle. And these are multi-stakeholder work groups. There's a coordination team, and then there's three sort of topical work groups that are going to be talked about later today. And those really form the core of this moving forward effort. So just a little bit about those work groups. There's a coordination team. This is led by both Reclamation and the Seven Basin States. And our role is to direct and review the efforts of the three different work groups. So we have one work group focused on M&I conservation and reuse. Each work group has three co-chairs that span either M&I districts, if you're an M&I, or ag districts for ag conservation. There's environmental NGOs that are co-chairs, and then also Reclamation as co-chairs. And I know each group is going to talk about that today, so I won't get into it. But the idea there is that we wanted to have sort of a diverse group of leadership on these work groups. So in the M&I conservation group, their main goal for this phase one effort is to build off of the analysis that was done in the basin study for M&I conservation and reuse. They're neither confirming or denying the numbers that were put out in the basin study. That really isn't the point of the work groups, is to prove what was in the basin study. It's just really to go into it in more detail, because that study was so big, it just couldn't afford that level of detail to all of the different issues. So these work groups are digging into that in more detail. M&I is better understanding the role of M&I conservation and reuse. Ag conservation is better understanding the relationships between transfers, productivity, conservation, and how that may impact imbalances going forward. And the Environmental and Recreational Flows work group is looking at existing programs and thinking about opportunities for additional solutions that are going to enhance environmental and recreational resources, but with this idea that we want to do that in a way that achieves integrated benefits for multiple uses throughout the basin. So like I said, this is just a phase one effort. In May 2013, we just launched phase one of this process. We're anticipating to wrap up phase one in fall of this year. It will be followed by phase two. Phase one will be a release of reports from each one of these work groups that's going to talk about kind of the key findings and points that they've found through the year and a half of working together. Okay, so since you're going to hear plenty about those work groups later today, I wanted to talk about two other efforts that are going on that are part of this moving forward process, or a parallel effort to this moving forward process. And one is we have undertaken a Colorado River Basin 10 Tribes Partnership Tribal Water Study. And this screenshot here is of an agreement that really formalizes the commitment for Reclamation to move forward on this. It was signed in September of 2013, by the chairman of the Ten Tribes Partnership, Daryl Vigil, and then our Assistant Secretary for Water and Science, Ann Castle. And again, this formalizes this commitment to move forward on this study. In case you aren't familiar with the Ten Tribes Partnership, this is a group of 10 tribes that hold quantified rights on the main stem and the lower basin of the Colorado River, and then the main stem and some of the tributaries in the upper Colorado River basin. And there are 4 tribes in the upper basin, 5 tribes in the lower, and then the Navajo Nation kind of spans both the upper and the lower basin. So we're working with that group on this study. So just a little bit more information about what it is. It kind of follows a similar approach to what the basin study was. So step one, assess future and current water use for those tribes in the Ten Tribes Partnership. Assess the system impacts of the development of that water by the tribes. So as the tribes develop that water along different scenarios, what does that mean to the rest of the resources in the system? And then look at the different challenges and opportunities for the tribes to develop additional water in the case that they aren't utilizing their full water right. So again, we're building off of the assessment in the basin study. It's conducted jointly by both Reclamation and the tribes, so we very much are partners in conducting this study. We think it's going to be about a 2-year study. We started last September and targeting wrapping up around 2015, end of 2015. Okay, so the next and final thing I wanted to talk to you about is the work that has been ongoing in the climate science arena. So in July, Reclamation and a group of collaborators that are listed on the front of that report there released a new suite of climate projections. For climate being temperature and precipitation, and also hydrology projections that come from those projections of climate. These have been downscaled, they have been bias corrected, and they are a new suite that is considered in addition to the suite of climate projections that we use to conduct the Colorado River Basin Study. So the suite that we use in the Colorado River Basin Study was developed in a phase 3 effort by the Coupled Model Intercomparison Climate Program. It came out in 2007. That program has now released a new suite, came out in 2012 and 2013, so now we have an additional set of projections from climate models. These are very much considered an addition to what is already out there, so it's not a replacement of. It's not that we have old and new, we just have the previous and then the new. And the research is definitely ongoing about how we combine or not combine sort of this new set with the previous set. And there are some differences in that previous set that we used in the basin study. So I wanted to show you some of those today and talk to you about how we're kind of moving forward to understand those a little bit better. Okay, so I'm going to step you through the differences in temperature and precipitation and then talk to you about the differences in stream flow that we're seeing. So the first panel up there on the top is temperature. So we're looking really at the western part of the United States, and so you can see the Colorado River Basin there. And we're looking at the difference between the newer suite of the climate projections and the previous suite, and these are differences again, and we're comparing 2 30-year periods, 70 to 99 and 2040 to about 2070, and 50th, this is just at the median, so that 50th percentile. So what you can see for temperature is there's not a whole lot of difference. So what we're seeing between these two different suites of climate models is that they're in pretty good agreement about changes in temperature throughout the basin, and it's warming. Okay, so the bottom panel there is precipitation change. Same type statistics, the difference, the new minus the old, previous. And what we're seeing there is that there are some differences with respect to precipitation. And you can see it, a lot of kind of the greater differences over the Great Basin there, but there definitely are some differences in the Colorado River Basin, primarily in the upper basin in Colorado and Wyoming there. And we're seeing a wetting trend. So the newer generation of climate models are projecting wetter, more precipitation than the earlier version, and really the reason why is still under investigation. It's not quite clear if whether this is a true climate signal, if this is an impact of all of the various steps that when these climate models project this information, the steps that those have to go through to be able to downscale and bias correct them so we can view it like this. So that is very much a hot topic of research these days. But what does that mean in terms of runoff then? So if you take those projections of temperature and precipitation and you move those through a model that can project stream flow from those things, what are the differences that we are seeing? So you're looking at a cumulative distribution function plot. This is showing the percentile differences for the change again in the mean annual runoff at least vary. So you have the percent change on the y-axis there. And the blue is what we saw from the previous set of climate models, so what was used in the basin study. And if you just take that 50th percentile and you follow it up there to the previous, we see about a 9% decline. So at the median, this difference between the previous 30-year period and this longer-term 30-year period. And that's roughly what we saw in the basin study. And so that is roughly what's translating to that 3.2 million acre foot imbalance. So that's a median 9% decline. Take the demand at the median, subtract that, you get 3.2 million acre feet in balance. So now if we look at where our new set of climate models are telling us stream flow might be at the median, we're seeing roughly really no change. So, we're seeing that those increases in precipitation are playing out in slightly more runoff than we were seeing in the previous set of climate models. So, what does this mean going forward? First of all, I think an important point to mention is that you can see the range of what is coming out of the previous and the new version of the climate models is very much similar. So we're looking at minus 30 to plus 30, so we're still seeing that full range of variability. And I think to pick up on the points that Terry made in his talk, that difficulty in predicting the future on the Colorado River Basin is not going to get any easier just because we've had a shift up in the median from these climate models. So we're still seeing that range, and actually on the wetter end, we're seeing a little bit more of a range with this newer generation. Like I said, again, the reasons behind this are still very much under research. We're actively engaged in it along with the rest of the science community to better understand this. The new projections are in no way ready for prime time to be used in any type of decision making. They need to be understood much better, and we're actively working in that. Okay, and so just to wrap up here, I know I kind of covered a lot of things a little bit all over the place, but so to take you back to the beginning, we completed the basin study in 2012. We identified several areas where we should advance and take additional steps. We launched a moving forward process in May 2013 to move forward in some of these areas. Sort of at the crux of that is these three work groups that are going to be discussed later today. We're anticipating that phase one effort is going to wrap up in the fall of this year, and will be reports out by those work groups. And the separate but coordinated efforts that are ongoing, we have the 10 Tribes Partnership Tribal Water Study, looking to wrap that up in 2015, end of 2015, and then we're also actively working to further the climate research. We are continuing to evaluate these, but because we're seeing that similar range of variability, that still supports this notion that the future is very, very hard to predict, and we need to continue to undertake robust planning, such as what was done in the basin study. And so I thank you for your time.
Very good. Thank you, Holly. Let me ask the first question just to make sure everybody understands. So sometime this fall, the audience can expect the reports, the phase one reports.
Yes.
Will you, as part of phase two then, will you give them 60 days, 90 days, whatever, to make comments on phase one before you get into phase two?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, that's the expectation.
All right. Questions? Yes, sir.
So the question, what's the total acre feet of the total water use of the 10 tribes partnership? So I can't answer that directly in terms of what their total water use is, but if you sum up all of the rights that are quantified for those 10 tribes, and it's a little bit tricky because some of those rights are in terms of diversions and the other, and some rights are in terms of depletions. But if you sum up the diversion rights, it's about 2.9 million. And most of that is the lower basin tribes, for the most part, are using their full rights. In the upper basin, that's not quite the case.
All right, anyone else? But I want to commend you and your team. This is the executive summary of the supply-demand study. It's about 30 pages, I think. I've read through it twice, and it's very well done, very easy to understand. And the implications, when you take a look at the possible alternatives and how you have to jiggle them, twist them, analyze them in all the different ways that you described, you're looking at a mammoth effort to try to come up with some thoughts and solutions about how to survive the apparent imbalance that's coming our way. Okay, Holly, thank you so much for showing up. Appreciate it.